Welcome to Bengals Scribe Session, presented by JosephOtto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, your Bengals beat writers Paul Daner Jr. and Richard Skinner escort you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium to hear the news, analysis, and observations unfolding within the team from those documenting it daily. All with the sidecar of snark and absurdity you've come to expect. Let's go. We're about to start a party in here. He's big strong, take a time here.
Up in the air. AJ Green makes the catch.
Oh man!
A deflected ball winds up in the hands of AJ Green and the clock hits zero. It's about to get rowdy here, but if you want to
fight, get out of here. All right, welcome to the latest edition of Scribe Session. Bengals beat writer Paul Daner Jr. here with my co-beat writer Richard Skinner. Skinny, how we doing?
Very, very good. It's a nice day out. Yeah, to say the least.
Well, you know what? Here's the thing. I always wanted Scribe Session to feel like someone was just sitting with us in my living room or on my back porch. Well, you literally are sitting in my living room with Skinny and I right now as we hang out and record this, because there's no access at the stadium today, and Skinny's headed up. I'm shipping up to Dayton for the practice up there, so we decided my casa in Norwood would be the perfect place to make the podcast.
Made it up from Little Mexico, better known as Kentucky, the southern part of Ohio, to come up here. It was a little strange. I had my papers checked at the borders. I came across the Brent Spence. Wait till that becomes a toll bridge, too, by the way, if it ever does.
I will never
venture over to this side of the river ever again if that's the case. I love it in Ohio, though. My goodness sakes, I've made my living over in Ohio for years. But, yeah, I love Norwood. Unfortunately, I don't think we're going to have time to go to the Pilot Inn today, though, are we? Or the mound? Can we go to the mound?
The mound is right down.
I know
the road.
It is. I realize it is.
I mean, I've got some time to kill.
I know you do.
You might. So I'm always up for a trip to the mound. Or you know, now I have been absolutely pimping my favorite place in Cincinnati that people don't know about or talk about often enough, which is in Norwood. There's a couple actually. One is Quatman's. Have you been to Quatman's?
I've not. I know of Quatman's. No, I have not. But I've been. I know of Quatman's. Yes,
Quatman's is so good. I got into a great Twitter debate not too far back when I tweeted about how I think it's the best burger in the city and the best kept secret. Because not only is it a great burger, but you can get on their burger days, which I believe is every other day, maybe Monday, Wednesday, Friday. You can get burger, fries, and a drink, and that drink can be a beer for like five bucks.
A lot of places you go, the beer's $5.
Right, and not only that, they completely operate on the honor system. You sit at the bar and you order beers, and then you have to go to the back little area and you pay back there, and they ask you how many beers did you have.
I like that. You know what it is? That's Americana, right? That's taking you and what we're all about, honest Americans drinking an honest beer and telling you exactly what they drank.
Yeah,
except, I love that concept.
Except I have a hard time with that sometimes.
Well, the only problem is
how long
is,
I was at Quatman's.
It's you go 1, 2, 3.
Let's see. Yeah, you got to count them up.
It's what you tell them every time. I only had a couple.
I had a couple.
Yeah,
I had a couple.
Yeah,
I'm not
just had
sure.
A couple.
Two or three, and then they'll say two.
Yeah,
and that's why that place is great. So I love Quatman's. Also, right across the street from me, pretty much, is Bluebird. If you've ever been to Bluebird,
I have not.
Great, like Greasy Spoon breakfast.
Gotta love Greasy Spoons.
Oh man, this place is so great.
That's the beauty. Norwood might well be the Greasy Spoon dive, and I say that with all, and I say that admiringly, because dives are great. I mean, those are really the places you want to go at the end of the day. Because you know what? The food's usually really good. The beer's usually really cheap. There's not crazy, goofy music playing. You can go have a conversation. Those are by far the best places to go in the world.
Yeah, this place is fantastic. It's actually a favorite of a local Cincinnati baseball hero. Todd Frazier always goes in there, and he is always talking about how great it is. Actually, I was in there this weekend. Todd walked in.
Todd Frazier, there you go.
Todd Frazier, there he was. Came on in right before he went to Kings Island. It was like his ultimate Cincinnati day.
Wow, that was, yeah.
He went to Kings Island. It was at Bluebird, and I saw he played. It was a night game. It was a Saturday.
Busy man.
Played later that night. I don't know how he did. He's probably 0-4. I can't go to Kings Island and then play baseball. I can't go to Kings Island. I can't even nap right. I'm too tired, you know.
It's funny. Usually your little league coach would probably tell you, don't do anything other than be ready to play the game that night, right. correct? He wouldn't tell you, don't swim, don't go to Kings Island, don't go crazy, and yet there's a big league ball player trying to soak it all in on a given day.
So
I kind of like that, though.
I like it, too. I think if you're an all-star, you're allowed to do whatever the
you're
hell
entitled.
You want
yes.
before you go and play. All right, so you didn't come to hear us talk about how great Norwood is, although I will do it for a while. Come visit. I just did like a promotional. This is just like a commercial
like
for Norwood.
Chamber of Commerce, man.
I know. Seriously. I should be on the payroll after all this. All right. So this is not the Norwood.com.
Next week, I'm going to pimp Boone County, okay?
Yeah. Let's do it. Let's talk about how great Boone County is. We'll get people out there. So, all right. So live from my living room, we are talking a little bit about, we're going to do some fallout from the trip to Kansas City. And real quick, before we start really getting going here, though, Skinny, I do want to let everybody know that we have big plans for the back end of this podcast today. Big, big plans.
I have a fantasy at the back end of this podcast.
Oh, wow. Well done. Well done. So we're constructing the idea this year. Skinny and I are going to go head-to-head in a Bengals fantasy football head-to-head matchup thing. We really haven't figured out what we're going to call it yet, but it's going to be where we're going to draft players for the Bengals, so it'll help you get insight into your fantasy team. If you're into fantasy, we're both fantasy guys. If you're into fantasy, we'll help you get a little insight into how we view the Bengals that way. But we're going to be drafting offensive players, defensive players, and we're going to go against each other, and we do need some sort of bet at the end, so maybe you can help us come up with what exactly our wager will be on our year-long head-to-head Bengals fantasy
huge,
game.
Huge.
Huge wager. So anyway, we're going to get to that later. We got a bunch of stuff we want to get to right now. We're going to get to that later. Check it out, probably out around about the 47.5 minute mark. I feel like that's where we're going to end up dropping it in at. So make sure, if you want to just listen to all the fantasy stuff, you can go forward to that now. But I want to, okay, just want to make sure we got that out of the way first before we really got going. I made the trip. Skinny stayed behind, held down the fort here at home, thankfully. And I can say that one thing that does happen when you go to Kansas City is you are never served a small portion of meat. I learned that at Jack's Stack when I could not have seen more off meat on a single man's plate than I've never seen like a bunch of us.
And this wasn't like Brazilian steakhouse, like where you finally turn the card over when you say no mas.
No, this was not all you can eat. Yeah. This was a standard meal at this place called Jack's Stack, which if you go to Kansas City is a fairly famous little joint. There's a bunch of us scribes there. Most of us were the same thing. All of us were starving. All of us hammered food. Just ate as much as we could until we could explode. I don't think anybody had more than half of the meat gone off the plate. There was
pretty solid.
They do not mess around with portion size in Kansas City. That was my number one thing I learned.
You know, that night I had a small barbecue sandwich at home, just for the record. Just to make sure that I kind of had a feel for Kansas City.
You probably come off better than me. But there were other things that we learned in Kansas City, mainly preseason opener. Of course, 41-39 was the final, which is completely insignificant unless you're a complete degenerate and you gambled on the game.
I will tell you.
Backdoor cover.
The line was Kansas City laying 2.5. Somebody was desperately rooting for Matt Scott to get in on the 2-point conversion, or desperately hoping he did not make it on the 2-point conversion. One's a happy soul, one's a bad soul.
You know where I can tell you, you can find out who it was? All you got to do is go through the papers of the divorces filed
yes.
on Monday, and you'll find those guys.
Hey, I do know two people that probably did wager. Brent Musburger and Al Michaels. Those two are always talking about it, so I'm guessing they had something on that game.
Yeah, the preseason backdoor cover, no doubt about it. So 41-39 was your final. And some interesting things come out of it. Mostly, number one offense looks pretty good. It was pretty crisp. Really, you may hear 41 points and think the defense looked bad. The defense actually played pretty well. I mean, outside of one blown assignment before halftime with Travis Kelce, the 69-yard touchdown, gave up a couple of field goals. Special teams really was where most of the damage ended up getting done about them. But the first-team offense, first-team defense, pretty crisp and came out relatively healthy. To me, that's a win.
Yeah, the only big nick-up was obviously Jason Campbell. We'll touch on that here in just a little bit. But I thought the first-team defense, especially after the kickoff return, because it was a quick-change situation. It was a short field. Team's already in field goal range, so all you're hoping at that stage is minimize the damage, minimize and keep them in field goal range, and don't allow them in the end zone, and they did that. I mean, I thought the first-team defense was really, really sound. It's hard to gauge the first-team offense because, really, you only had the one series from Andy Dalton, but it was a very good series. They ran the ball okay in that series. I think Gio was 3 carries for 12 yards. something along those lines in that series. But the big play being the pass to A.J. Green. He had a makeshift offensive line that kept Andy clean. There was a little bit of pressure on him actually on that pass, but he was able to get it away. There was some pressure in his face on the third down pass in the red zone in which he tried to hit, I believe, Sanu,
yep.
And he overthrew him. And I think that was more pressure-related than Andy making a bad throw. But all in all, Andy looked sharp enough. They kept him from getting killed. And quite frankly, I know you asked that question of Marvin Lewis, and he kind of giggled about it because it sounds like there was some discussion about whether or not to play Andy because of that makeshift offensive line.
Yeah. I mean, it was a conversation that I know that I had with multiple people before the game when you started really looking at who was going to be out there when you're talking about a rookie in his first start at center in Russell Bodine and then undrafted guard Trey Hopkins.
Right next to him.
And then you have Kevin Zeitler playing guard, your one returning
starter,
guy.
Yeah.
And then Will Zvitek and Marshall Newhouse, all in their first games with the Bengals, all trying to figure it out together, all standing in front of a guy that you just gave a contract that could possibly equal $115 million.
That's what you're protecting him with,
yeah.
By the way.
And so, I had to ask Marvin, did you consider not even putting Dalton in, and he laughed and said, "You sound like my boss now," inferring that obviously Mike had come to him at some point and said, "Maybe we should not play Dalton this week."
And it's funny, on Twitter, I set an over-under for Andy throwing passes before the game. Sorry, I said, with this line, there's no way he throws more. I'll set the over-under at 4 is what I said, because I thought, he'll throw a quick out here maybe in a three-step drop job here just to get it out of his hands. I mean, they trusted that line to protect long enough to throw a deep ball. That was interesting to me.
They did have the one deep ball call, which I think you're right. That was kind of surprising. Everything else, short passes,
yeah.
Screens.
But it's what their offense does to a large extent, too.
Yeah. And so, yeah, and give credit. That was a heck of a throw by Dalton with a guy kind of in his face, really put it right out there. But we're not here to analyze all of that. I think for the most part, you come away happy with that. Special teams, I'm not too concerned with special teams, even though there were a heck of a lot of miscues.
The thing that was a little bit disappointing with that, though, is you did have a chunk of guys who were on those special teams last year. It'd be one thing if it was the late third quarter and it's a bunch of, undrafted guys or guys that picked up off waivers or rookies, and you're having them run down there and they're just not used to this in the NFL level and they'd given it up. This was in the first quarter when you had a chunk of main guys on those special teams. That being said, if this occurs 3 out of the first 5 games in the regular season or 2 out of the first 5 games in the regular season, which would be a lot, then you got some concern. But I wouldn't be concerned because it happened in a preseason game. And quite frankly, D'Anthony Thomas, I think he's going to make a lot of people look foolish this year if he continues to return punts for Kansas City, because he can scoot.
Probably right. And there was some debate afterwards about who's to blame with the Dre Kirkpatrick miss of D'Anthony Thomas. Dre, who gets off the vice. Did I tell you we were told what the gunners, I've been calling them gun control, the guys who try to stop
right, yeah,
the
we
gunners.
Were trying to figure it out.
They are they're called a vice
because they're trying to squeeze
two,
you,
and he's a single if it's one guy
yeah,
out there.
So
yeah, the vices are trying to squeeze you. So I'm going to call him gun control because
I like gun control better.
I like it. But they technically, Darren told us that they are vices. He also told us that Dre Kirkpatrick on that play, who broke free of the vice and came in and had D'Anthony Thomas dead to rights, needs to make that play basically. And there was Dre saying afterwards, "Well, I got hit in the back," and so.
But he also said he should have made the play too, though.
It's yeah, he did.
But I'll be honest, it did look, Paul, like he did at the very last second get knocked enough to where you would think in theory he could have reached out and grabbed the guy. I'll give him benefit of the doubt on that one, because I think at least he showed you he was in position to make the play. He's got to make the play. I'll say that too.
Darren wasn't real interested in hearing these.
I know
excuse.
That. I
can tell you that.
That
much. He basically said, "I feel like if you get pushed in the back, it should just make it easier for you to make the play, because he's pushing you right into it." And the bigger picture here is that he said this has been a problem with Dre, in that he is as good as he said he's as good as he's basically ever seen at getting off the vice, but he really does have problems in making those tackles in the open field. Something
he's not a
also
big guy
with him defensively.
He's just not a big guy either, though. And I
yeah.
think that's part. And granted, I know punt returners aren't big guys either, but he just doesn't appear to be a physically big guy who wants to hit you.
Yeah.
If he tackles you, that's great. If he's there to make a play, I think it's a plus for him. He just doesn't look like a guy that wants to lay the wood to you.
Yeah. No. And it's just a thing that they have to get figured out with him, because Dre is going to be the guy that's going to be out there all year.
Right.
And he said that's the biggest thing that they're working with him that he really needs to improve on, is when he gets there, he's got to make those types of plays, because he's so often going to get there because he's so good at getting away.
Well, and the other part to him, though, as I mentioned, why I said it, why, you know, he's not the most physical guy. He's thin. He's almost rail thin to a large extent. You know, he's the fifth corner on this roster. And while he's shown some cornerback skills, and he showed a little bit last year, and he also showed a lot of flaws last year, you know, he's going to make his bones right now being the guy that's doing that on special teams. He's got to go down and make that play. So, you know, he can't just say, hey, I'm down there. I'm not big enough to make. You got to make the play, because as a fifth corner, that's where you're going to play.
Yeah, no doubt about that. So we saw that on special teams. For the most part, I thought Darren Simmons might, as I had in the headline from one of my favorite quotes from Darren Simmons, he's like, it's not time to unleash hell yet.
Yeah.
You know, he did not. He was rather subdued from a guy who isn't often subdued. He is not too concerned yet. You know, a lot of guys who are just kind of getting back into the swing of things. But that said, I think hell hath no fury like Darren Simmons if this happens again and then again in the preseason. He needs to see a big jump from week one to week two from these guys. He can't have that type of continue. I mean, there were four or five major screw-ups on special teams in that game.
Here's the thing, and because after a game, for those that just want to know logistics, you can't talk to everybody. You don't have the time to do it. You don't have the resources to do it. It'd been interesting to see if you'd have caught up to Darren Simmons immediately after the game, what his response would have been. By the time we got a chance and you got a chance to talk to him on Saturday, that's a couple days to at least reflect, calm down, see the film, be clinical about it as opposed to being emotional about it.
Yeah. Oh, if you saw him on the sidelines, he wasn't real thrilled, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Probably, like you said, because earlier, probably more angry with his first team unit that
right.
let up the return.
Right.
But, you know, I personally would not be too concerned with the special teams at this point. Darren Simmons has rarely had problems with those groups. He had a complete reboot group last year and eventually found a way to put it together, and it won't be that this year. And I think they have enough of a track record that there shouldn't be a huge concern there. The really, talking a lot about offense, I want to get into this because I want to go to Hugh Jackson here, because really kind of he quickly addressed three or four interesting topics in the locker room on Saturday. And so I just want to bring in Hugh, talking about a few different topics that happened on offense, and then we'll go ahead and dive into them after he does. Here's Hugh Jackson from Saturday in the locker room.
It just showed to me the guy's true guts, you know, because I seen him. I go, hey, guys, he's throwing up. And they go, huh? I go, this guy's throwing up. And so I thought it was just a second. So when we called timeout, I went to walk out there. I kept saying, hey, look, buddy, I got you. I just thought he was going through motion. Then the whole time I was sitting out there, here he is just bent over, and it's just still coming. And I'm saying to myself, who are we going to put in the game
here?
So it got a little rough, but he's a tough guy, and I appreciate what he did. He played extremely well. I mean, guy had a heck of a game.
The throw, the couple touchdown throws he made, especially the one to right. Just talk about what you saw out of that, and if he made the right decision.
Oh, yes, he did. He made a check. I mean, again, he followed coaching
on rights.
Uh huh. He was. They were in a particular coverage, and he made the right check and threw the ball there. And did a great job. I mean, that's the way we practice it. So again, kudos to him. I mean, he's paying attention to meetings. Obviously, he doesn't get a lot of reps like the other guys do, so I thought what he did was sensational. So, I mean, he showed that he can go in there and play. He's not afraid. He's not too big for him. His eyes were good. He talked. He communicated well. So I thought he did a heck of a job.
You know, the line you put out there was not the one that will be out there in Baltimore, obviously.
I mean, you never know.
You know, maybe it is.
You never know.
How did you feel like they hung?
I thought they battled. I thought they battled extremely well. You know, obviously, there's some couple plays here and there we wish we had back. But at the end of the day, I thought those guys, they competed. And that's what we're trying to do. We're just trying to compete, put our heads down, and play as hard as we can play.
How did you feel like Bodine held up in particular? I mean, a rookie in the middle of all that makeshift mm-hmm. is even crazier. The trial by fire kind of continues for mm-hmm. him, I guess.
It continues, you know. It's on to the next one.
Yeah.
You know, this would be a great challenge for him again this week. So, I mean, every week it's not going to get easier. It's only going to get harder.
Yeah.
So, I think he's up to the task. He did a great job. But, again, it's still a work in progress, and he's just going to keep working at it.
How much did you see with the calls? I guess we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
How did he do with the calls, you think, getting you guys in the right
place? I thought he did a great job. And I thought it was a great compliment by Coach Alexander. doctor about him, he said when he came off, even when things wasn't perfect, he knew exactly what the issues were. Yeah. He could really tell him the things that he saw, and they were right on what Coach Alexander was saying. So that's a good sign when a guy can come back and tell you exactly what's going on. That, I think that's a positive.
And the running game was good. I mean, you guys were able to, every back that was in there really had success.
Yeah, it was okay. It was okay.
Maybe not up to your standard.
Absolutely. It's okay. I mean, we got a ways to go. You know, it was the first time we got to play against somebody else. Here's the next challenge. So we just got to keep rising to the occasion, you know, every week. And so I probably will never be satisfied all year. Yeah. I think they know that. So we'll just keep going at it and see what we can get to stay.
You averaged 4.5 a carry by the end of the season. You still shake your head and say,
I would, because I expect more. I think we have a talented group. Yeah. I think the sky's the limit for them. Whatever it's going to be, I don't know what the number's going to be, but I want it to be higher than the one you just mentioned. Yeah. I know that.
So Hugh kind of touched on a number of things here, and we'll knock them out in order after what we heard from Hugh. So he talks about the offensive line, and he kind of joked when I said it's not the offensive line you're going to throw out there against Baltimore. He said, "Well, I don't know. You never really do know. Maybe that is the line he's got to throw out there." I thought that was a pretty impressive showing, all things considered, from those guys.
Well,
when you're talking about guys that are in their first game and a lot of them seeing their first NFL snaps.
And give Hugh credit for having a little faith in them right off the bat. It would have been easy for him going in with Andy to say, all right, Andy, I'm going to script you a couple of runs, and I'm going to script you a quick pass, and then that we're done. You know, if the drive continues, it'll be a run-heavy drive and an out-of-your-hands. I think he schemed that like he was scheming it in a regular season to some degree. I mean, that's what it looked like to me. You know, probably saw coverage that they liked, went ahead and threw the deep ball because they got some man coverage out there, and AJ got a chance to get past it. And I think it goes back to, he's right. While Whitworth will probably be back, be stunned if he's not, we still don't know about Andre Smith. This is lingering a little bit now with the concussion protocol for him, and I'll be interested to see if he's up there tonight in Dayton or not. I'd rather doubt it. You don't know in this league, and that's why, you know, I wrote that a few weeks ago about, you know, the offensive line, this might actually help them, that you get a chance to use different combinations and see different guys under fire. I think as a coach, you need to see that, too, to understand that if Witt can't go in a game or Witt gets hurt in the first quarter of a game, by golly, I got Marshall Newhouse can go in there and get the job done. You know, maybe in a game, can Trey Hopkins be a 16-game starter in this league yet? Probably not even close to it. But could I have to put Trey Hopkins in there because somebody got dinged up and need him for a couple quarters? You know, I saw what he did early in the preseason, and by golly, I've seen what he's done in practice. I can put him in there. You've got to have some of that depth. And you, this is almost, to a degree, a good thing because it's almost forcing you to develop it very quickly here in the preseason.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. They definitely need to get a couple of games where they have their one unit out there working together.
Game three, hopefully that's the case.
Yeah, they do need that. But, I mean, you saw it specifically last year when they moved so many guys around because of injuries in the line. And it ended up turning out to be one of their strengths because you had Anthony Collins came in and Whitworth moved to guard. And then you had Pollock playing both guard spots at different times. And all of them played well. And it actually gave them a lot of options as the year went on and guys started to get a little bit dinged up. Now, a lot of that depth is gone right now, and they're depending on other people, but this is kind of where they learn about him. So I think that was a pretty good sign coming out of the first game. The second thing that Hugh talks about was our vomiting QB, Matt Scott, who, you know, it is one thing to say we came out of this game and pretty much what everyone was talking about was a guy who threw a touchdown pass, and it ran for a two-point conversion and then threw up again on the sidelines. But, hey, Matt Scott, he can throw up and do things.
And the weird part was he had shown us nothing in camp.
He was awful.
Absolutely dreadful throwing the football. And he doesn't get many reps. He will get maybe, if you were to have an 11-on-11 in 14 plays, he's going to get one or two of those plays at the very most. So he's not going
to
get a lot.
It's probably a screen to a tight end or a handoff.
Correct. So he doesn't get a chance to show much. But when he did get a chance to show us some stuff, where he throw a deeper out or something, you know, down the field, he showed us nothing. Now, we weren't able to see him use his feet in camp because you don't have quarterbacks scrambling around. So he was able to use his feet a little bit. He was pretty accurate throwing the football. The touchdown pass to Connor Vernon was a nice throw. He led him perfectly on the inside, and he was able to cross the face of the defender. He did some good things. I mean, he still is a very long shot to make this roster, but it did make a very end of a game, which is normally extremely boring in the preseason, very, very interesting. And very conversational.
It was definitely interesting. It's certainly an interesting conversation. But I thought what was interesting was, you know, you had Marvin Lewis at the press conference talking about how Matt Scott showed something
right.
to everyone that he's out there trying to make a team.
He said he was an example to the rest of the team.
Yeah, yeah. This is the way that you're supposed to be playing right now. Hey, and I'll give him credit for that. Now, to everyone that's asked me this question a million times, Jason Campbell was terrible. Matt Scott was great and vomited. No, Matt Scott is not going to jump Jason Campbell. Jason Campbell is going to be the backup quarterback. Stop it.
He might this week, though, just because Jason Campbell's
thing
dumped.
Because he won't be out there.
Exactly. No, he is not. It's funny. People thought that Tyler Wilson was signed. I got a guy that thought that Tyler Wilson was signed because Jason Campbell was so bad. Tyler Wilson was signed because Jason Campbell's dinged. And again, we'll get to this in a little bit here a little bit later on. But, you know, the bottom line is Jason Campbell is the backup. It's not even definitive. The good part for Matt Scott is he does put himself in the conversation to maybe stick on this club in some way, shape, or form, if you have some issues with AJ McCarron, or at the very least, and I talked to him about this, you got yourself another really good quarter on film to show another team.
Yeah, I mean, I think you earned some respect with that. Although he'd probably like to go out there and play a game where he doesn't vomit and he can still and go out there and go ahead and play okay. Let that not be Willie Beeman being his only calling card.
And you know this. He was also going against threes. It's different. I mean, threes are threes for a reason in this league. Threes don't stick around in this league. I mean, there aren't threes in this league. There are
future garbage men.
Correct.
That are playing.
Exactly right. So he's playing against the lower tier guys in that circumstance. He probably will this coming week get a chance to show himself against maybe some first team, at very least second team guys, and we'll see if he has similar success. If he does, then okay, you know what? He starts to open your eye just a little bit more.
Yeah. I still laugh about it. I mean, it's just unbelievable. It was funny because, you know, as far as the behind the scenes of it, you know, we're there, and at KC, they are very strict that once the two minute mark hits, they lock down the elevator for the coaches.
For the coaches.
So the
yeah.
coaches can go down. So the last thing you want to do is miss out on the whole reason we're there, which is for the post game locker room to go watch these scrubs play. So we assure that we're going to get down there by going as soon as they allow us, which is with 5 minutes left in the game. Because I can tell you, the Kansas City press box is closer to the moon than it is to the field. It's almost a mile high, if you will. It is a high boy, 9 stories up. So I'm not taking those stairs. So anyway, so I go down. So I miss some of this, and I'm in the under hallways of Arrowhead Stadium when all this starts kind of coming out and realizing what had happened. So we didn't really have time to put it together and realize what had happened and get something from him that night. But it was unbelievable. The next day I wake up and it's just gone completely viral.
Yeah, now there is an interesting twist to this, though, and I kind of wrote about it for Sunday, is he had some issues with this in college. And it's not a weak stomach. He said this time around it was a sinus infection with a little asthma, and it was a hot night, as you can imagine, hot and humid in Kansas City. He was running around like a crazy man and trying to get a team in a hurry-up circumstance. But he got dinged up his senior year in college three times in about a four-week span. He was only diagnosed officially with a concussion one time out of that, but he did vomit two of the other times that he got hit in the head, which vomiting can sometimes be a sign that you did have and did suffer a concussion. Now, in college, there are HIPAA rules that kind of prevent teams from being able to release always the official diagnosis of players. Players have to literally give their permission to say, hey, this guy's got this kind of an issue. They did come out one time in college. It was after a game against UCLA when the athletic director said, yes, he did suffer a concussion. Matt allowed me to tell you that. And there was some criticism that they didn't really treat him properly in that circumstance. Now, there was a play right before he started to throw up in which he slid in the Kansas City game. A guy came at him, and it's hard to see if the guy hit him or not. He did pop right back up, and he ran right back to the huddle. So I'm not to suggest that he suffered something here, but it is an interesting circumstance. The guy's had that problem before, and then all of a sudden, right after that slide, right after it looked like a guy might have clipped him in the head, did he start to vomit. I'm going to take him at his word that it was a sinus infection, but it is something to monitor because he's had those issues in the past.
Yeah, no doubt, because that would be a certainly, at the very least, a controversial situation because you know that the Bengals needed Matt Scott to take those snaps, and they need him to take snaps. They have nobody else. I mean, I'm sure they would have run somebody out there, and I'm certainly not suggesting that they purposely said, well, get back out there because we don't want to have somebody else go out
there. It happened so fast, and he looked so normal that even if you were to do some level of concussion protocol, I think you'd have to see a different sign than just the vomiting. Because, hey, as Marvin made a point we asked him the question on Saturday. You know, guys do vomit all the time. You don't see it on the field very often, if at all. But you know, hey, guys are running around. You know, it does happen, especially this time of year, because they're not fully in shape yet, fully in condition yet. Especially a Matt Scott in training camp. You know, he doesn't get a ton of work in. So I mean, this for him was a huge, probably conditioning circumstance. So I'm going to take them at their word, but it is something to monitor moving forward with Matt Scott.
Yep. So another thing that we talked about with Hugh Jackson was the running game. And, you know,
I love your question.
The kind of conversation of, okay, your running backs average 4.5 per carry in this game. After a year last year, you averaged 3.6 per carry, rather famously last year. One of the lows, tied for the lowest in Marvin Lewis era. So you got to feel good about that, right? But Hugh Jackson will be a not satisfied guy pretty much forever, especially when it comes to the run game, which is supposed to be his specialty.
Right.
So he said basically he has goals, but they're a heck of a lot better than 4.5 per carry. And I can understand that. He averaged, when in his first year in Oakland, was up at 4.9 and was 4.5 his second year in Oakland. And last year, the leaders of the league was Philadelphia at 5.1 per carry. So he probably has those numbers in his sights.
Let me just tell you something. If this team averages 4.5 yards per carry this year, because you don't have a quarterback that runs the football, this isn't like Seattle or San Francisco with Colin Kaepernick, or even Philadelphia, which did have Michael Vick for certain games.
And they ran that Chip Kelly quarterback running offense.
And even Nick Foles when he was quarterback and would run the football. So you don't have that to kind of inflate sometimes the number. If the Bengals average 4.5 in what would be really a traditional running game, this team will average, in my opinion, 28 points per game, and Andy Dalton will throw less than 15 interceptions. If you do that, you will put an awful lot of pressure on defenses this season.
Yeah, because those teams have to think about A.J. Green over the top, and really all the rest of the weapons that Dalton is pretty good at
you
putting in the right places.
You cannot walk an extra guy down in the box against this team. You just cannot do it.
You can't afford to because Green will beat you deep every single time. Or Marvin Jones, or they can work the seams on you with Eifert or Gresham. I mean, the weapons are out there, and this is what this gets back to what we've been talking about all offseason that Hugh Jackson wants to bring. If this is the way their offense can look, if they're going to average 4.5 yards per carry, it just opens everything up, and there's far less pressure on Andy Dalton has proven he can make a lot of plays for you. He threw 33 touchdowns last year. You know A.J. Green. He can at the very least just make plays by throwing it up to 18. So,
and it works the play. I mean, the more you do that, the better the play-action game becomes.
Right, using the run to set up the pass is clearly where Hugh Jackson wants to come from. If he can get this type of production out of his backs, look out. And I think, you know, that is the key, and that's why they drafted the way they did.
And Paul, I don't think it's talked about enough. When you're averaging just 3.6 yards per rush in this league, as the Bengals did last year, it turned out that what Jay Gruden had to do was use the pass to try to set up the run a lot of times. And I know he drew a lot of criticism for that. But if you cannot run the football, then you can't just keep trying to run it just because you think you should run it. You have to do something differently. So that did put extra pressure, if you will, on Andy Dalton to have to make plays. Suddenly, you know, you're throwing when you don't want to throw. You're throwing when you think that you need to do it to set up other things. And then you're getting yourself, unfortunately, in third and sevens and third and eights. And in this league, you're going to force balls into windows a lot of times in those circumstances, and you're going to come up with, unfortunately, more interceptions than you would like.
Anybody ripping on Jay Gruden for his play calling last year, and there's some of it that maybe you can point to, that's fine. Don't tell me he should have handed the ball to Ben Jarvis Green Ellis more, because he was averaging a career low, there's a reason why they replaced him.
You're just beating your head against
the wall. And it's probably the same people that say Ben Jarvis stinks and make fun of him for 1 yard and a cloud of dust are saying that he should have handed it off more. It's not about running more. It's about being more efficient when you do. And so Jay Gruden did whatever he had to do to get an offense to move the ball last year. Did it force more pressure on Andy Dalton? It sure as heck did. I'm sure that he didn't want to have to do that, but that was what the situation was last year. This is not last year, and that's why Jeremy Hill's here, and that's why they hope that Russell Bodine works out to be good in the middle, because that can really help secure your efficiency in the running game.
I will promise you, come January, if this team is still playing and they average 4.5 yards per carry in the regular season, Hugh Jackson will have a smile on his face because his offense will be very, very successful.
Very. I would not. That's a top 10 offense. If they average 4.5, that's a top 10. That's a top 10 offense. And cutting down on turnovers
big time
because you're not making Dalton have to make some risky throws. All right, let's do a little quick hitter here, and run down through the quarterbacks. They all have situations that they're in. So let's run through all of these real quick. We kind of touched on Andy Dalton. You know, he showed well. He's going to play a little bit more this coming week. He'll play a lot more in the third preseason game. They seem to be happy with him. He seems to be throwing the ball really well. Really, I don't think there's really any complaints at all about Andy Dalton, his reaction to the contract, or any of that. I think he's been smooth since everything went down last week.
I'd be stunned if the contract changes him as a player or a person. Yeah. I think everybody would agree with that. It does change some people. You've seen it before. I just don't think he's that kind of a person. You know, you didn't see a ton of him in Kansas City, but what you did see was really good. What we've seen in camp has been really, really good. He wasn't all that good, though. It's funny, on Saturday, he had a few overthrows. I think I had him 10 of 21, and some of that was defense-related. So I'm going to give a little credit to that side of the football as well. So that was about the first rough patch for him in camp, Paul, but I think he's been really good. I will be interested to see if he throws a pick on Saturday, what the reaction of the crowd will be. He's not going through the season with a zero in that column, all right? It's going to happen. It'll be interesting to see the reaction of the fans when it finally does and how he handles that.
Kind of interested just to hear how they react to him in general when he's introduced.
Good point.
I mean, will there be some boos?
I think there will be.
There's certainly some people that are unhappy that they signed
him. No matter how you tell them the logic of why you signed him, there is that faction that still think it's the dumbest thing that could have ever happened. So yeah, I think you will hear when he's introduced on Saturday, or when he gets in the game on Saturday, I think you'll hear a handful of boos out there.
Yeah, I'm curious to listen for that. So we'll be listening for that. So that Jason Campbell, who probably will hear some boos if he were to come in the game.
if he doesn't, throws another interception.
Right. Yeah, no doubt. Jason Campbell, who just had an awful debut. You just the worst case. I mean, he made some nice plays, but you really can't even talk about him when you had two bad interceptions.
Actually, the touchdown pass to Brandon Tate, I mean, I know he was open, but that was a well-thrown football.
And Sonsbacher, he did a great job of avoiding the rush as well. I mean, really, he made some nice plays.
But, man, the two picks.
And the second one was just brutal. I mean, I joked that they need to get Jason Campbell in one of those stare-down videos they do at Great American Ballpark.
He'd win.
He would win. I wouldn't go up against him. I mean, he was just staring at every receiver. And that's why you could have called a pass interference on the first one. Hamilton. But that's because the DB had so much time to break on it. He was right on top of Hamilton by the time the ball got there. And the second one, I mean, you can say the guy broke early on it. He broke as soon as Campbell started looking that way.
Oh, no, he baited him almost. Like, really?
Yeah. He was so far in front of it, it wasn't even funny. I mean, so, you know, Jason Campbell, first game with a new team, you know, you give him some credit. He claims that it's true, he only had one interception return for a touchdown.
In his career. That's stunning to me.
Yeah, and then two in this preseason game. So, okay, that's fine. You're probably feeling like he's going to be okay. The other element of news from this was that he did get hit in his elbow and dinged up. He doesn't think it's too serious.
Didn't practice Saturday.
Marvin Lewis doesn't seem to think it's too serious, but I would suspect you're going to have probably a week of rest-ish for him.
He certainly didn't practice Saturday.
There's
no reason
to put him
in the game. In Dayton.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't practice by Tuesday, I just can't see them saying we're going to risk him in the game on Saturday.
There seems to be no real reason to do it. They have Tyler Wilson here now, so I would expect to see him in the third preseason game at Arizona. I think Campbell will probably be back by then, assuming everything heals to plan as they think it will. Campbell said he was feeling a lot better when we talked to him, so I wouldn't be too concerned about that. And again, he is the backup quarterback. He will be the backup quarterback barring injury on opening day, so stop asking me about that on Twitter. So Matt Scott, we talked a lot about him and his issues. Tyler Wilson, a guy who was drafted in the fourth round
last year
by Oakland, didn't make it through the whole year. Ended up on their practice squad.
And then got
He actually was really well-liked. He was kind of a scouts diamond in the rough type guy that everyone thought maybe he could be. He was really good at Arkansas.
Very productive at Arkansas. Their all-time leading passer, actually,
Arkansas. Yeah, so a lot of love for him, but he didn't even make it through the whole year. He eventually, Tennessee snatched off the practice squad, and Tennessee ditched him last week.
Yeah.
They said, forget, don't even need to see you in a game.
Before they even played a game, correct.
And it was sort of
Which makes you wonder, and I don't, you know, I'd have to look at how deep their quarterback situation is. I know what's their starter and all that is. you know, I don't know, was he just brought into camp as a fourth arm to just provide a camp arm? And once game started, they said, we can't get you any reps. But that's not a good sign either. So for those that are thinking that he was signed to do anything more than just add an extra arm in camp, because you got to have at least three people in camp, least, just for all the things that you do drill-wise, you need that third guy. I'll be honest, I'd be stunned if he even gets a snap in any of these preseason games.
Yeah, well, they may need him on
They may need him, but again, I go back to it may be Andy for a quarter and Matt Scott for three quarters, and you just don't see Tyler Wilson at all.
And he's maybe there in case Scott gets hurt or something like that. Yeah, that's possible. But yeah, because he doesn't know anything about the offense or anything else, so it would almost be counterproductive for him to be in there at this point. So he's here. As soon as Campbell is healed and healthy, I think you'll probably see him. The last name is something that's very interesting and something I kind of got a bit to the bottom of this weekend, which is revolving around A.J. McCarron, everyone's favorite fifth-round draft pick. And, you know, obviously always a hot topic because everybody loves A.J. McCarron.
Some fans were thinking that it's time for the A.J. to A.J. era to start, as you know.
Yeah, of course. For all of you thinking that. The bottom line is A.J. McCarron is the last guy on the PUP, although technically he's not on the PUP. He's on the non-football injury list, but for all intent and purpose.
Explain to people what that means. Just,
the non-football injury list is different than the PUP because it's very simple, as it said. It did not happen while playing football activities. Most of the rules are the same. There are some different scenarios as far as the team does not necessarily have to pay an entire salary when it's non-football injury because they don't feel liable. But normally most teams will work it out, and depends on what exactly the NFI is.
And for people who are wondering, that could be somebody who fell off a skateboard. It could be somebody who decided to ride a motorcycle and fell off the motorcycle.
Or it could be somebody who hurt themselves in the previous season.
Right, either with the team they were at or in college. Correct.
So it could be any number of things.
It's an injury that did not occur while you were being part of the football team.
Part of the Bengals. Exactly. So that's why he's on the NFI. But as for all like actual in purposes of how it works in season, it's essentially the same. The differences are all in technicalities with pay and liability and things like that. So A.J. McCarron is the last guy left on either of those lists. So if you're talking about guys that are possible to start the year on PUP, which is the first 6 weeks of the season, you're unable to perform, so you're not able to come off and be part of the active roster, but you don't count against the active roster, so it saves a roster spot on cutdown day. And then after 6 weeks, for week seven is the first week that you would be eligible to come off. They can activate you off the PUP, and once they activate you off the PUP, you can practice without counting against the 53. But once you do that, the team has 21 days to activate them, and they
which
actually
is another
be part of the roster.
Another three weeks. Yeah.
So, all that said, basically all you need to know is they can play as early as week 7 and as late as week 15 until the team has to make a decision on them. In that period, they're kind of in limbo in there in case anything happens. The Bengals have, ever since the rules changed, kept two quarterbacks because it helps them keep an extra roster spot. And they don't really need a third one. The only time you need a third one is if a complete disaster strikes.
And as durable as Andy Dalton's been, you haven't needed a second one the last 3 years
this
either.
This is true.
I mean, you haven't.
This is true. And so McCarron, the only way McCarron had any value to you this year is if he could get some experience in the preseason. He is now at the point, I think you can pretty much surmise, the fact they brought in Tyler Wilson.
He's not going to play preseason.
That he's not going to play. He's definitely not going to play this weekend. And I would say at that point, he's probably not going to play at all. And I would then even further argue, if you did think he could play the third or fourth preseason game, it wouldn't even be worth it, because the roster spot is more valuable than him just getting a quarter and a half of work.
Because you drafted him because there's some upside, because he had some success in college.
2 to 3 years down the road.
Yeah, you're drafting him with the thought that, hey, maybe he develops into something. We've seen it before. But guys are drafted in the fifth round for a reason. They have flaws. They have a lot of flaws. And yeah, you can throw me a Tom Brady and tell me what he did as a seventh round draft pick. For every Tom Brady you give me, I'm going to give you about 50 second round quarterbacks, 100 second round quarterbacks. I'm going to give you 50 first round quarterbacks who have flamed out. So all you're right. All you care about for A.J. McCarron is to be able to somehow, if you have some long-term belief in him, to find a way, creatively or non-creatively, to keep him around for as long as you can keep him around. And I don't know if this is completely creative on their part, but this is a way to still find a way to keep him around.
Yeah, they can keep him around, not have him cost you a roster spot, and if Andy Dalton gets hurt in week 8 and you have Jason Campbell as your starter,
and then you need a backup,
and you need a backup.
He's been in the meeting rooms at least. He may not be taking reps, but he's been he's got a knowledge of the system.
He's at least there in case he's there as an in case guy, and that's really all he needs to be at this point. So I think it works out, and I think we can pretty much say with a fair amount of certainty right now, A.J. McCarron will start the year in the PUP, and there's a pretty good chance, more than likely, you won't see him the rest of the year doing anything other than in a ball cap and shorts
Correct.
On the sideline. So that's where his situation stands. And then next year he can come back and
he might be great.
Hopefully be healthy, because the thing is, his shoulder injury is an issue of tightness. And the only way you can fix his rest, you can't, you know, there's no other way to rehab this. It just needs time to really just heal. And so,
and if I'm him, that's a good scenario for me with what I'm going through right now. It gives me a chance to get my feet on the ground in the NFL, heal an injury, be able, when it's time to show you whether I can play in this league or not, to physically be 100% to show you that. The worst thing you want to do is be 80% with your arm, throw a long out route and have it picked off, throw another pass where you just don't have the arm strength you think you do and have it picked off, and then get cut and go, you know, I wasn't able to show you because I was hurt. No, I want to show you what I've got when I'm 100%.
It's far more important that he's healthy than shows you a quarter and a half of work this preseason
where
he's at. It means absolutely nothing in the big picture. What means something in the big picture is him maybe being healthy enough to be the backup quarterback next year. And you're going to need him to be healthy for that. He can spend this year redshirting and learning the offense and learning from Andy Dalton and Jason Campbell and all that stuff. So that's where we're at with the quarterbacks. And that's kind of where we're at, really, with the whole team right now. But we've got something special for you. So
I'm excited about this.
Skinny and I have concocted a bit of a plan.
Concocting is the right word.
We have concocted. And we've got an idea, something that can be fun to follow. And we know you fantasy geeks are out there. And
I'm one of them.
Yeah, exactly. And I play, but I don't want you to feel like you're not getting your fantasy knowledge that you need from us. Now, we are partially going to give that to you, but we want it to have a Bengals feel. We want it to have you can learn about the Bengals and also get your fantasy fixed.
Plus, we're competitive, so we want to compete against each other.
We are fairly competitive. And so what we've concocted is basically a Paul versus Skinny Bengals fantasy head-to-head season-long thing. Working title.
All right, now you have to run through the ground rules of this. You're going to sketch them here a little bit, and you'll have this in the walkthrough, and we'll continue to post these. But you're going to sketch this out just so people kind of know what the ground rules are we're playing.
Yeah, by. And it'll be good for us because it's a good way to kind of give.
Because hell, you told me this, and
guys,
I'm not even sure what all this stuff is yet.
Yeah. All right, so here's what it's going to be. Basically, it's going to be we're both going to draft two Bengals fantasy teams. We can pick whoever we want off the team. The team will comprise.
No quarterbacks.
No quarterbacks because we can't do that. No kickers.
Correct.
So you're going to have five offensive players and five defensive players. So the offensive players will just be a running back, a receiver, and three flex of any offensive player that you want. And it's pretty standard on offense. 10 yards is a point. Touchdown gets you six. Two-point conversion. If you fumble, minus 2 points. Fairly simple on offense. Now, defense, the point system gets a little bit. We just pick any five defensive players, and you can get points. You get four for a sack. You get half a point for a tackle. You get 2 points for a tackle for loss, 4 points for an interception, six for a touchdown, six for a forced fumble, two for a pass breakup. We're doing pass breakups. We're getting deep. And 1 point if you're a special teamer and you get a tackle. So let's not forget our special teamers. They're important. They're people too.
They are people too. As we saw, they're people that sometimes don't make plays.
Yes. This is true. So that, under that system, so we will go back and forth, snake draft this back and forth, and draft our team, our Bengals fantasy team, and go against each other.
You know what we have to do, and I just thought of this on the fly. We may have to have like some kind of way. Maybe we have to talk to the fine folks in marketing. Mm-hmm. Who have people that back Team Daner and people that back Team Skinner.
That's good.
And somehow, some way, they become winners, too. We got to figure that out. But you and I are going to have some kind of a wager here. We're still not sure what the wager is, so we need some help with that as well.
Really, in this game, and all the information everyone's going to glean from this game, we're all winners, Skinny.
Yes, really, we are. We all.
So, you're right. But the point is that we will not do things without some sort of wager on the line.
Of course not.
Because that's just not the way we operate. So we've got to figure out. We now enlist your help, and we go to the fine diehards, because only the people that are still around at the 46-minute mark of the podcast,
they are the best. You're our guys and gals.
These are the people that we know we can count on. So tell us what you think a good wager would be, because how we're going to do it is we're actually going to break it down into quarters of the season. So this draft that we're about to do, for the first 4 weeks of the season, we'll do another one for the second four, then another one the third, and then another one the fourth, and you get one keeper on offense and defense to carry
each
over.
Quarter.
And you can, whoever wins each quarter will get
a smaller prize.
Yeah. So we can figure out what all.
But
these
then there's a grand prize between the two. The grand win for whatever it is. We've got to come up with that for the whole thing, for the season long running total.
Public humiliation on the podcast is probably going to be necessary.
Or maybe in public itself.
Maybe some sort of karaoke moment or some sort of I don't know.
Tricycle on Fountain Square.
Yeah. There's a number of different. We enlist you, our diehard listeners, to tell us who you think it should be. You can send them to me on Twitter at Paul Dana Jr. or at NKY Skinner, or just put them in the comment section or send us emails.
Yeah, sorry about that, Paul. We're gonna draft again here in just a minute, but maybe we'll have to find a way to get you guys involved with you guys back in either Daner's team or my team.
Yeah. We can find a way to involve. Maybe there'll be anybody that loses with me could be backup singers for me. Not me. I'm already talking like I'm losing. For you, it's some sort of Fountain Square karaoke performance of some sort.
Here's the great part: you will not want to hear me sing anything.
Which is why I want you.
Lip sync with the best of them, man.
That's it. Maybe a dance routine.
Oh boy, I don't think you want to see that either. I can do Cotton Eye Joe. I do a mean Cotton Eye Joe.
Maybe that's it. Maybe we have you do Cotton Eye Joe for everybody. All right, so let's get to it. You want to hear some of our drafts? So we're going to go down the line here. Now, first pick.
I'm going to let you have the first pick.
You're
going to
give me the first pick?
Only because, look, you've been on the beat a little bit longer than I have.
I earned it.
So I'm going to give you earned the fact. But see, here's the way the snake goes, as people know. You get the first. I get the second and third. You get the fourth and fifth, and so on and so forth.
Yeah,
it's a good thing to go back and forth with this.
Okay, so I'm not going to lie, I'm actually fairly torn already for the first pick, because when we look at our point system, defense can really rack some.
You know
up.
What I need? I need a pen, Paul Daner, because now I'm going to have to track. I've got it right here in your living room.
Yeah,
is a nice pen. I'm going to have to track
who
I've got.
Everything has access. You have access to everything here. So let's see. Here's, I think for my first pick, I'm really challenged here, because you have Vontaze Burfict out there.
A lot of points possible.
I see sacks for four. I see interceptions for four, a touchdown, a forced fumble. And then there's the tackle for half a point. So I'm getting five to 6 points right there every game, no doubt, before I even start racking up anything else. He'll probably have a tackle for a loss, so eight or nine.
You know, I should have put a negative personal foul clause in this game of some kind, but okay.
You're right. I mean, I'm looking at probably a standard 8 to 9 points every week. Now, there's a guy like Gio. You know, you get six for the touchdown, and then he's probably going to – I mean, more than likely, I think I've got to go that way. I think I'm going Giovanni Bernard with my first pick.
All right.
Pick.
I'm
taking the running back.
You took my guy off the board.
Running back space. I've gone Gio.
Yeah, you took my guy off the board. So
you've got two and three. It's your – because, I mean, listen – Giovanni Bernard is going to – I've been calling it all year. 300 touches is the number that I see.
I think it's a good number.
You're looking at probably 18 to 20 touches a game. You're looking at a guy they're going to be always trying to get him in space. I think by the end of the year you see him as a centerpiece of the offense. I think he's going to get a lot of goal line carries. He was really good on the goal line last year, actually, even though they have Jeremy Hill, who's probably – you say, well, isn't that why you have a guy who's turned 38 pounds? I don't know. Gio was great at getting
into
the end zone. So I think you could see him get a lot of touchdowns, too. So that's what puts me over the top going Gio.
All right. I got the next two picks.
You get the next two.
I'm going to go with Vontaze Burfict and AJ Green.
Now, that's a fairly intimidating way to clap back
and see if you'd taken Vontaze, I was going to go Gio and AJ. So.
Yeah, that would have been tougher for me. So
yes.
you've got Burfict and Green. That's a pretty solid. That's a pretty solid one.
See, I kind of suckered you into taking the first pick.
No, you did. You did. That's okay. Yeah, because you're right. I think the two is probably better.
Yes, it is.
And that's fine. All right, so now I'm back up with the fourth. When we talk about offense here, I mean, I don't know that I could go Marvin Jones. I just don't know that I could go Marvin Jones here. I mean, he had 10 touchdowns last year.
I know he did.
And he's going to be very involved.
And he's going to be a red zone guy.
Much. They're not going to throw it as much. I need to get a receiver in here. And I can't let you take Marvin Jones from me, and then also I don't have a receiver. But do I think Geno Atkins is going to be the real Geno Atkins? Because he'll be a sack monster, an absolute sack monster. But I don't know if those are worth enough points for me. So I think in the end, you made it real tough.
I know there was
a big three. There was definitely a big three there. I'll go Marvin Jones.
All right, you got two here now. Don't forget.
Oh, I do get two.
Yeah,
right.
See,
oh, that is important.
See, you're.
I'm already screwing it up.
You get a chance to clap back at me right here.
Yeah. All right. Marvin Jones is going to be where I'm going to go, and then I'm just going to stack this offense. I'm going to go Eifert.
Oh, you took my guy.
I'm going Eifert.
That one got me. Okay. That one cut me quick.
I'm telling you, the second year tight end bump. I've been riding that research, and I love the second year tight end
he's
bump
been great.
With Tyler Eifert. I think he's going to outperform Jermaine Gresham.
I don't even think it'll be close. I think he will be he'll be the main receiving weapon between the two. That I think he doubles Jermaine Gresham's production. Excuse me. This season.
You think doubles?
Doubles.
That's. Yeah, I think I kind of pegged 5 touchdowns, 700 yards as kind of probably where I would maybe see him landing, which would be a pretty big bump from what he did last year. They still got to find ways to get him more involved, but you may be right. Double would be big. Jermaine probably doesn't hope for that because he'll be searching for a team next year, but we shall see.
You cut me to the quick with that one. That was a pretty good selection.
So now you've got two.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go back to defense probably because I can save a couple of these guys for down the road. I'm going to take Carlos Dunlap.
Okay, you're going Carlos
with,
Dunlap.
With the hope of I'm hoping for a double. You know, he talked the other day to you, and I was not in on the conversation other than I overheard a little bit. He's talking about how he thinks he has a chance to be a Pro Bowl caliber player, wants to try to make that next step. To do that, he's going to have to be a double-digit sack guy. And you know, maybe this is the year that he really takes his game to another level because he's always been right there with it. So I'm kind of hoping for that for Carlos Dunlap.
Not only that, what you get with Carlos with our 6 points for a forced fumble. He has 8 forced fumbles the last 2 years.
Yep.
He's had 4, and I think he's going to have more than that. I think he's going to have 6 to 8 forced fumbles this year coming off that blind side, which he's never done before. He is so vicious with that strip. I think you could be looking at an extra 30 to 35 points right there with Dunlap. So that's a pretty good pick. I like that.
And so I've got a wide receiver. I still need a running back, and I still have 3 flex offensive guys
You've
to take.
You've got plenty of
places. I better at least get one of those flex guys right now. I'm going to take Mohamed Sanu. He's been so good in camp. Didn't do a ton the other night, but you know, if Andy's going to throw 30-plus touchdowns again, which I believe, maybe this is the year where a couple of less go to Marvin Jones because you've got him and a couple more go to Mohamed Sanu.
It's possible. It's possible. I think you just slipped up. I think you just slipped up here.
Okay, it'll be interesting because I had a couple other guys in mind.
You may. I'm going Jeremy Hill.
See, I was thinking about I know you're smart because I was kind of saving that for down the road, but you're going to go with that as the extra flex
I'm
guy.
Doing it just to screw you.
Well, you're going
to
do the bracket.
Because you now have
thing.
An empty running back position.
I do. And I have to guess now is what I have to do.
don't think that I won't go after that. So I'm exploiting your weakness.
That was a good call.
I'm exploiting your weakness and going with Jeremy Hill. And as far as Jeremy Hill.
And you can start him too because he's a flex.
Absolutely, I'm starting him. He's in there. So I say, you know, you look at what his production is going to be there fantasy-wise. It's a guy that's going to get 10 to 15 carries a game.
Oh, easily.
And so I think when you're looking at that, and he will get probably some goal line. I do think Gio maybe will get more. But, I mean, he's going to get 10 to 15 carries a game. He's going to rack up some yards. Those are all points for you. And he's got – The difference between him and Ben Jarvis Green Ellis is he has that second level breakaway that Benny doesn't really have. And that's where he made a lot of his hay at LSU, and the Bengals are hoping he does it here. I mean, I think you could see him break some really long runs for this team. So I'm going Hill, and I should almost just fill out my entire offense at this point because I've got 4. Maybe I just keep right on going down the line of offense. But I don't know. Let's see. There's really not a whole lot of big time off. We pretty much stolen unless
yeah,
I was going to take
got,
Gresham.
Yeah, there's still. As I say, there's still 2 potential guys.
Gresham's still out there.
You've backed me into a corner at running back. I'm going to give you that.
I have. Maybe I just take Cedric Pierman or something just to really stick it to you. I won't do that.
Well, then you're sticking it to yourself at that stage.
That's fine.
Because Jeremy Hill. The thing about you with Jeremy, you can play Jeremy Hill and feel confident you're going to get some really good touches for him.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's consistent. That's consistent money for me every week. All right. You know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to say I believe that, and I believe that tackles for loss and sacks are going to just rack up for me. Geno is probably not.
Wow.
He's probably not the prototypical defensive for this setup.
He's a great second quarter guy to me, boy. First quarter, I think he still works his way back into the mix.
Yeah, you may be right, but I think I'm going to go with Geno and hope that he explodes onto the scene right from the jump.
Okay.
I'm going to go with Geno Atkins as my first defensive player, but now it's back on you. You've got, right now, you have A.J. Green, Mohamed Sanu, Vontaze Burfict, and Carlos Dunlap, and you've got two picks right now.
Yeah. I have to take Gresham just because this is a two tight end offense. He is more than likely going to be the second tight end. He has been a productive player. I know he's been a player that's been frustrating to people, but he's been a productive player. I'm not going to back down on what I said when he took Eifert. I still think Eifert doubles his production, but to me, he still gets 3 to 4, 5 catches a game, or at least I'm sorry, targets a game, maybe more than that, and can get me a touchdown every few weeks. So I have to go Gresham with that pick.
I can tell you from a guy who had Jermaine Gresham on a couple of fantasy teams the first couple of years, he just consistently underperforms. It's just unbelievable. From a fantasy standpoint, you would think he would be a beast in the red zone, but he just hasn't really
been. No, you know what he is every week? He's 3 catches for 48 yards. He's always right below the threshold of what you need for like points in leagues. Then you look up at the end of the year or it's 6 catches for 61 yards, and you look up and you go, boy, he had an okay year, didn't he? But on a week-to-week basis, it's not stand out enough. I'm with you on that, but I got to take somebody, and we're running out of players, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, we really are. Okay.
All right, now my other – I got one more defensive. I got one more pick here.
You go.
Man, I'm probably going to have to go back to defense, and this is going to be a strange pick. You're going to probably laugh, but I'm going to go with the one guy that's got big play potential on that defense, and – well, Vontaze has it, but in the secondary, and may help me in the return game. I'm taking Adam Jones.
Yeah, that's a good pick. Because he could steal you a return for a score, maybe in the, I mean,
he's the nickel guy, so he's gonna be out there a lot as a corner.
And he could get no a offense pick to Leon, as much and, as anybody.
And no offense,
and he
to,
can catch a lateral. We'll call a lateral for a score.
That's
count.
A good call.
You never know when he's gonna end up with a lateral. We'll count that.
And no offense to Leon Hall or Terrence Newman, because both have been, you know, they're just when you talk about just good vets, those are those guys. But they're not real big play guys. And sometimes that's a good thing. It means that people aren't throwing at you a lot. They're not picking on you a lot.
Yeah.
But Adam Jones has that big play potential. I have to go that route.
Yeah, you're right. That's a pretty good pick. I was actually just thinking what I was going to try to do in the secondary there, and I wasn't really 100% sure. I do kind of want to go secondary too. So I think I will go. Boy, am I going to go all injury team here? I mean, I don't know that I can quite do that if I'm going to go Leon Hall and Geno Atkins fresh off their injuries. I don't know that I can do that. Reggie Nelson has been known to get some picks, but I don't know that he's enough of a playmaker for me. Maybe I just – yeah, this is a really challenging pick. I think – boy, I'm really grinding this one. I think I'm going to have to go with Leon Hall. He's gonna get his fair share of picks. He'll get some tackles. He'll come up and make plays, I think. And then
you get two here.
I get two here. So where else do I go with this? I don't know. I think I'll have to go. I've got to keep going defense. I guess I do. Oh, do I do E-Man? Do I go for some sackage from Gilberry? I'll go Gilberry. I'm Team Gilberry.
Yeah, you like Gilberry. You like
I do like Gilberry. He'll get me some production. Starting defensive end. He'll get some sackage. I'm okay with that.
All right, so far, let me see. I've got one. I got 3 defensive players, correct?
3 offensive
and 3
players.
Offensive
You're
players.
Very symmetrical. Yeah. Very well done.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm proud of that, to be quite frank. All right, so now we're getting down to where we're looking for some sleeper possibilities.
It's sleeper picks.
All right, I'm gonna have to go Sanzenbacher just in case an injury happens. Plus, I think he still gets some touches in 4 wide sets. I think he's your 4th guy. He just seems to continue to show up in camp, does he not? And he showed up the other night a little bit, too.
I give you that.
So that gives me at least, because I'm going to have to just by default take a running back when this is all said and done, and I'm not taking one yet, unless you want to keep backing me into a corner with these guys.
I don't know. I might have to do that.
You know, I'm going to go back to the secondary again, and I'm going to take George Iloka just because I think he can get you some tackle totals. Not enough to be huge, but just enough, and maybe make a couple plays with picking off
a
pass.
Hope he can catch the ball this year.
Yeah, and if he does, because he makes plays on balls, he just can't catch them.
That was his problem last year, and there was some blame put on his busted hand from in the preseason. But he really needs to make sure he can actually catch the ball this year. He put himself in position over and over again and just couldn't haul it in. But that could end up being a really nice sleeper pick. I like that pick for you. You just got your two.
All right, I need an offensive guy left and a defensive guy. So yeah. Now it's your two.
All right, so I'm gonna say, I'm a bit mesmerized. I was a little bit set into a place of wondering exactly how good this is going to be when I saw Marcus Hunt toss a dude. Maybe he's ready.
Dude.
That was impressive.
If he is ready and he does that to more offensive linemen in this league, that's a 10-sack guy too.
Yeah. So I'm going to just go ahead and say Marcus Hunt. I'm going to say Marcus Hunt. He could get me some of that. And then I've got to go. I think I've probably got to try to rack up some tackles. So maybe I'll go with Emmanuel Lemieux. I don't know that I want to go Maluga.
It's funny you say that because I'm thinking there's one of two ways to go there. It's the surefire. He's going to get you five tackles a game in the run game, Ray Maluga, or Lemieux, who we still he's such a wild card. Yeah, he's such a wild card guy. He could get some picks. He's so athletic. He can get out there on tight ends and get you some picks too.
You're exactly right. So all right, so you can finish out your team here.
Well, I have to go running back. And boy, this is like a roll of the dice because now if a guy gets cut, do we get a compensatory pick?
That means you poorly picked. You need to know this team and understand who's probably going
to
get cut.
The surefire running back to take would be Pierman because I do believe he's going to make this roster.
He get you a special teams tackle.
I know he could.
For a point.
But he's going to get zero in the run game. I mean zero, unless they snap one to him as an up back.
Yeah.
I'm going to take Ben Jarvis and roll the dice that he makes his club.
Wow. You're going to take a guy who might not, well, probably won't even be on
probably
the roster.
Probably not. Here's the thing. Here's the only thing I can hope is that they decide, you know, we love Jeremy Hill, and we'll use him in the last half of this season more and more, but we trust Benny off the bat just a little bit more to keep him around and be a part of it.
He was the first quarter, though.
Right. I know that. So that's what I'm saying. Benny might be the guy that's the number two the first quarter of the season. And I can come back around and get me some Jeremy Hill late. You've seen that before, where rookies, they still bring him along a little slower.
Man, I hammered you with that Hill pick.
It was a great pick.
I hammered you with that Hill pick.
But who was the second back in the game the other night? What running back went in second the other night?
Ben Jarvis Greenhill.
Yes, he did. That surprised me, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I'm with you. Okay. Right.
Then I got one more defensive guy to take, correct?
Finish it off.
Man. Are we going to go Ray Maluga-less? Is that what we're going to do?
It's up to you. I mean, at a certain point. You've got to make that decision.
I'm going to go back to the secondary again, and I'm going to take Terrence Newman. Yeah, and just, hope the vet makes me a couple plays. He's always going to be around the football, and so I got to go that route.
All right, I got one pick. I'll finish it off with Ryan Hewitt because –
Wow!
Yeah,
that is a deep because I love
That's
it.
A deep pull.
I wrote about
to make the team. He's going to get a few snaps at fullback and flash out at tight end and maybe catch a ball or two.
I kind of identified him pretty early in camp. I thought he was a guy to keep a quick eye on. I did a small notebook item on him. I think you're going to do something a little bit bigger on him later in the week. He's making his team, and honestly, it wouldn't shock me the first time they line up in an I formation or an offset I that he's not the fullback lining up in that circumstance.
Right now, he's the number one starter in the offset I, if that's what they line up. I don't know how much they'll do that.
And how many touches he'll get.
But he will be out there on the field, and that's more than I can say for just about anybody else that I would be drafting at this point.
Quite frankly, if Dennis Rowland was still on this roster.
He might have taken, even though they've never thrown Dennis
No,
the ball.
But he's at least comes in eligible every once in a while.
Which, by the way, I am curious to see. So Tanner Hawkinson came in as tackle eligible.
Yeah, I saw that,
so
yes.
So for your Bengals drinking game of number 72 is now eligible, you now have that man to. So when you can be aware of that when they play that. Because I know everyone loved to play the Dennis Rowland drinking game whenever they watch Bengals games, so you can enjoy that.
So I may have a big fat zero in my running back total for the first 4 weeks of this season.
But you also have Burfict and Green are going to rack up.
They're going to rack up points.
You will be riding Burfict and Green all the way. So what we'll do is we will do Team Skinny versus Team Daniel, and people can hop on whichever team they think they believe in. I'll put all this in the walkthrough here, so it'll all be you can just head on over there to the site and cast your votes. Cast your votes in the comments section, or you can put them on. Send them to us on Twitter. Tell us who you're with, and also let us know what you think for our bets. We want to go public embarrassment. If you've got some ideas, feel free to send them to us, and we will feel free to put something serious on the line for the end of the season.
Sure.
This is over the course of a whole year. This is real serious stuff. So We hope this gave you a bit of your fantasy fix and some Bengals player fix to kind of get you a feel, and we'll be revisiting it every week as the year goes along to let you know where the standings are at and kind of talk about if we're going to do any transactions. Could we allow to do one transaction a week if we'd like
to? We just still don't even know. We're starting something up, and we have no idea what
we're pretty
starting.
Much are just making up the rules right now. So if you have any ideas for rules, feel free to let us know, but we're now locked in for the first bit. So, all right. Well, this has been a rather eventful podcast. We just got pretty serious there. So thanks for listening. Make sure, thanks again, Joe Sfato Group, joesfato.com, for sponsoring Scribe Session. We love having them on board now. And make sure you keep checking out everything on the website at cincinnati.com. Get your Bengals app. You can get the. It's the best way to see all the stuff, all the interactive
stuff.
It's
easy to see all
there.
The stuff.
You can go through our tweets. You can look at the videos that we're posting up. You can go see the blogs and all the stories all together in one. All you got to do is just search for the Inquirer Bengals app and download it. It's free. It's free.
Free.
Well, what else do you need from us? So and you get all of our information there and information from some other people as well. So make sure you go there and get the app. Beyond the Stripes will be back on August 26th, I am thrilled to say that we have our guest locked down, and the Bengals Director of Player Personnel, Duke Tobin, is going to be our guest. And if you don't know who Duke Tobin is,
you need to.
He's the absolute architect of this team, and he's pretty much the reason for their resurgence. To say it's all on one person would be unfair. There's a huge team of people that do work over there. But when you're talking about all these great drafts in a row, Duke Tobin has been the head behind all of them. And he's great to analyze the players that are currently here, all the personnel, because that'll be on August 26th, that Tuesday, right before cutdown week. So we're really thrilled to have him coming and joining us on Beyond the Stripes. That's at 7 o'clock, the 26th, Tuesday, at Moorline Lager House. Come down and visit us, listen to the show, hang out, and then we'll have one every single week from that point forward for the rest of the season. So I think we updated everybody on everything. I think that's pretty much. We've got a lot. Special Section will be coming out on September 4th, so you can keep an eye out for that. I mean, what else do we got going? We have so much
and
stuff.
And we're there every single day.
We're there every single day. Sometimes we're not happy about it.
But we're there
we
every
are
day.
There every single
every
day.
Every single
because,
day.
Because we're bringing it to you, because we care about you.
Exactly.
The viewer, the listener, whatever else you're doing. So anyway, thanks for listening to Scribe Session. Of course, Scribe Session comes to you every week as well. So we'll have to you next week when we will start looking deep at the roster and exactly how it's going to construct. So look for that next week. Skinny, thank you for coming to my house
Paul,
in Norwood.
Thanks for hosting me.
Are you going to stop over at the mound on the way out of here?
Probably, unfortunately not, but I may stop there on the way back home from Dayton. We'll see.
There you go. Maybe you'll see there. So anyway, hopefully we'll see you around town. And thanks for listening to the latest edition of Scribe Session.